to the members of the race which he loves as his own. We must affirm, however, that the Jews as a nation, and therefore the vast majority of their individual members, given the solidarity of their national organization, will everywhere show themselves hostile to the supernatural life. The Right Reverend Antonio Garcia, one of the signatories of the collective letter of the Spanish hierarchy on July 1, 1937, has summed up in striking language the essential features of the present struggle in the world as outlined in the previous chapters of this book. He has had a splendid opportunity of seeing the Spanish phase of it. Monsignor Garcia writes as follows, quote, "It is evident that the present conflict is one of the most terrible wars waged by Antichrist, that is, by Judaism, against the Catholic Church and against Christ. And at this crisis in the history of the world, Jewry uses two formidable armies, one secret, namely that of Freemasonry, the other open and avowed, with hands dripping with blood, that of the Communists and all the other associated bodies, anarchists, anarcho-syndicalists, socialists, as well as the auxiliary forces, rotary, and leagues of benefaction, in which are preached the exclusion of Christ, of his morality, and of his doctrine, or which one hears at least that abstraction is made of such, as if Jesus Christ had not clearly declared, 'He that is not with me is against me.'" A writer who sees in a study of the consequences of the Jewish nation's naturalism merely a series of fantastic statements about a supposed Jewish conspiracy has not grasped either the unity of the divine plan or the meaning of the kingship of Christ. The Jews do work with abnormal secrecy, and in the Masonic society, they certainly have a powerful secret auxiliary force working for naturalism, along with open and avowed auxiliary forces of communists, anarchists, etc. In the world as it exists, the Jews, as an organized nation, refuse to accept him who is the cornerstone of the building and the foundation of right order, and look forward to a messianic era to be ushered in by another Messiah. Do they not proclaim this from the housetops? Klausner, professor at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, in his book Jesus of Nazareth, writes as follows, quote, "What is Jesus to the Jewish nation at the present day? To the Jewish nation, he can be neither God nor the Son of God, in the sense conveyed by belief in the Trinity. Either conception is to the Jew not only impious and blasphemous, but incomprehensible. Neither can he, to the Jewish nation, be the Messiah. The kingdom of heaven, the days of the Messiah, is not yet come. The ethical code of Jesus is no ethical code for the nations and social order of today, when men are still trying to find the way to that future of the Messiah and the prophets, and to the kingdom of the Almighty, spoken of by the Talmud, an ideal which is of this world, and which gradually, and in the course of generations, is to take shape in this world." End of quote. A critic may point out that the attack on Christianity by immoral art and by unbelief would continue without Jews in the world. It is quite true that even if the Jews were to disappear utterly, there would still be original sin in the world, and consequently, forces of revolt working for naturalism under the leadership of Satan, whose whole being is in revolt against the supernatural life of grace. What must be insisted upon, however, is that in that hypothesis, the best organized visible force, the one with the greatest cohesion and dynamic energy, would be withdrawn from the naturalist camp. Responsibility of Jewish leaders. The leaders of the Jewish race have a terrible responsibility. St. Thomas insists that the excusing words of our Lord, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," were uttered on behalf of the common people, but not on behalf of the princes of the Jews. Not only have they formed the ordinary people of their race to consider the idea of our Lord being the Messiah promised to their fathers as absolutely absurd, but they keep them in strict subjection. Pogroms, in which the rank and file of the Jewish nation suffer, serve the useful purpose of keeping the rank and file in absolute dependence on their leaders. This may serve as a partial comment on a statement in the Catholic Gazette, May 1936. The writer stated, quote, "The Jewish persecution in Germany, which leaves Jewish bankers untouched, is rather significant of an absence of unity between the Jewish financiers and the ordinary Jews. End of quote. It is true, for example, that statements have appeared about the position of the Bank of Bleichröder Mendelssohn in Nazi Germany, but there is nothing in that to indicate an absence of solidarity in the Jewish race. The rank and file of the Jews see that some of their leaders have been able to survive the persecution, and they know that these leaders will not lose sight of the interests of the Jewish race. However, they may have to dissemble for the moment. They trust that the day will come when Germany will have to yield once again to the pressure of international finance. In the meantime, they see a ferocious attack being launched by erstwhile Christians on those who have remained faithful to the supernatural Messiah. That, of course, in the last resort, prepares the way for the coming of the natural Messiah.